Hello and welcome. I want to talk in this video about base male instinct, our biological drivers, and the rebirth of the modern man, physically, psychologically, and spiritually. I mean, whether we see it or accept it, we're standing on the brink of a male awakening that inevitably will lead to a renaissance of thought and creativity, all stemming from communication between men, sharing of thought and experiences, beyond just simple awareness and self-empowerment. I've seen this in groups of men before. And if we look at the formation and interplay within groups, I mean, they reflect a lot of the same dynamics we see in modern society and culture. And the online manosphere is no different, so it's a benefit that we discuss these dynamics. It gives us all better clarity and awareness. Now, some people no doubt will jump all over this video and use it for justification for their beliefs. But the purpose of this video is to raise awareness of human behavior. My experiences of being in groups of men and the studies that I've researched, they show that when men interact in group settings, they take creative, they take innovative approaches to tasks, and they offer differing viewpoints. They question, they discuss, to find solutions to issues that they're facing. And that's the ideal scenario. But often individuals, they can experience a pressure to conform to group standards and models of behavior. And if there's too much emphasis on conforming to group norms, it shuts down creativity and encourages people to not be critical in their evaluations of others' viewpoints. Now, if there's no differing perspectives, new ideas, they're going to be very unlikely. And it's the same if people are on the defensive. And there's reasons why people have these reactions, which I'll touch on. But creativity and innovation, I mean, they arise when people question the status quo. And those people, in turn, they're viewed as a threat. So their ideas are often discredited. But to learn and to grow, we need to be open to different perspectives. I've always learned far more from those who disagreed with me. It's an old adage, but it's true. So there needs to be a supportive atmosphere so people can question things. And of course, in any group members, they need to be aware of members who only promote themselves rather than furthering the intellectual growth of the group. Because if we're not learning, we stop progressing, we stop asking questions. And in this climate of bias against males, inertia is very dangerous. See, because most people, I mean, when someone speaks, instead of actually listening to them, they just think about what they're going to say next. Instead of using that opportunity to consider and evaluate what's being spoken, before formulating their response. Because ideally, with communication, it should be people working in tandem. It creates a much more supportive platform for ideas. And as humans, I mean, we can adapt to our social environment. But too much change, it can lead to a lack of direction, a lack of cohesion. I mean, you see this in workplaces all the time. Now, of course, there's often reasons behind this, Keeping employees unsure of KPIs, keeping them guessing to increase productivity. Of course, on the other hand, too much stability leads to an inability to adapt and a tendency to follow without question. And with any group, there's a feeling out process, defining who are group members and who aren't, and who are adhering to group norms, and also gauging who are potential threats. It's a form of marking one's territory. And there can often be subgroups within a larger group. For each of these groups, there are distinct characteristics that differentiate them. A group is formed essentially when a number of people perceive that they share a common social identity, and that they identify with certain people and not with others. And through interaction, those individuals, they begin to develop group norms. They develop roles and outlooks which define the group, and all of which are then internalized, in turn shaping and influencing behavior. And I mean, you won't find these norms written in a handbook. their subconscious. You see it even in crisis situations. You know, when faced with a threat, you see groups of people emerge in response to this threat, you know, adapting and working in unison for a common goal. I mean, we all have that capacity, even if we don't have the awareness. It's ingrained. And who we are, I mean, our identity. Now, there's different aspects to our identity. There's our individual beliefs and our values, and there's also the social aspect, which is defined by our place in society and within groups. You know, groups we identify with, who share our perspectives. And we all engage in this differentiation, you know, by instinct, even if we reject the notion of a collective identity. Yeah, humans, I mean, instinctively, humans are a very judgmental bunch. I mean, if we identify with a group, we then make comparisons with outside groups. It's instinctive. We compare. But these comparisons, I mean, they're not always fair or accurate. And we heighten positive aspects of our group and minimize or deflect the positive qualities or positive characteristics of outsiders. Now, instead, we just focus on the negatives. And this, in turn, it creates a very biased perspective. But these judgments, I mean, they serve a very important role. You know, they enable us to carve out a very unique social identity. We feel a part of something. We feel like we belong. And of course, I mean, in life, I mean, we all wear many hats. And we belong to many groups. So there's many distinct components to our identity that need this validation. And we all have this need to belong and define ourselves subconsciously. And you are not a special snowflake. You are not immune to this. I mean, we're at odds with our identity. I mean, we instinctively want to belong, but also differentiate ourselves. You know, like homeostasis, we seek to equalize. By identifying as part of a group, but different from those outside of the group. And we do this instinctively. There are no exceptions. And we see this with groups. You know, there's a process of socialization for new members. Now, newbies have to prove themselves to long-term members to be accepted. And I mean, we've all seen this online in different forums. Now, members vote whether that individual is worthy of entry and is willing to toe the party line. Now, of course, there's always going to be outliers, you know, individuals who didn't live up to group expectations or who challenged the status quo. These outliers, these ex-members, I mean, they can rejoin the group, but they have to go through the process of re-socialization. They have to play ball. And often there can be those within a group who don't share other members' beliefs, but they're afraid to voice this due to being ostracized. Now, a group can state it doesn't have established rules or a code of conduct, but that's what norms are. They're judgments and expectations of what's acceptable behavior and what's accepted viewpoints within the group and in society. It's the flatlining effect. You know, these norms, they govern how members are expected to act and express themselves. I mean, we evolve to live in groups. It enhances our chances of survival. So as a result, we still seek group affiliation. It's our survival instinct. But there's no free ride in any group. And I've seen this. I've seen this in the prison environment. I mean, in that environment, it's more overt. But gang members, I mean, they're under constant scrutiny from their associates. Now, members conform, or they're a threat, and they're punished swiftly. And it's the same process in any group. Now, a person's behavior, their contributions, and so on, they're scrutinized to ensure they're conforming to group norms. Now, if everyone is in line and behaving, you know, cohesion within the group is very high. Everyone's happy. And this is preventative. Because, I mean, human beings, they're pussies when it comes to psychological pain. and if members are questioning the status quo and rocking the boat, cohesion lessens, and that causes psychological discomfort. So, with any group, there can be a risk of groupthink. And in groups, when a member or an outsider of the group, when they criticize an idea of that group, it can sometimes be seen as that person is criticizing an entire group of individuals. And the group members take that as an attack on them personally and on their social identity. But, I mean, conflict can be a good thing. Now, questioning in the hopes of furthering understanding so others' viewpoints can be heard so everyone can benefit. And a group that has this as their focus, wants rigorous discussion. You know, they want to develop and expand their scope of knowledge. And that's the ideal environment for growth. But with any group, you know, members, they model behavior, they model attitudes. And those that adopt these, they're welcomed. So there's pressure to conform in that regard, along with majority pressure, which of course, I mean, that peer pressure strongly influences an individual to change their behavior. So there's potential for negativity and inertia, and a culture of constant scrutiny of behavior. And there can be the belief that behavior is entirely dictated by our genes, our genetics, and our base evolutionary instincts, but this disregards learned psychological and social behaviors. I mean, what we define as values, we define psychologically. And what laws we've established, we've instituted socially. And the problem being that individuals can often perceive nature and perceive instincts and the natural environment as simply extensions of their own worldview. You know, seeing nature as how they perceive society to be through the lens of their own political or cultural or economic views, as opposed to looking at the evidence or studying deeper into human evolution, you know, biology, psychology. I mean, we run on instinct, but we've proven we are adaptive. Now, if ancient humans were to enhance their chances at reproduction, they had to be. And the more adaptive you are, the more you enhance your chances of survival, you father more offspring. Now, so your genetics, your experiences, and the culture you live in, they all affect and influence your behavior. I mean, you ask a social justice warrior, and they'll tell you that stereotyping is a crime. Evolution tells us it's a survival instinct. I mean, in a dangerous environment, you need to know who you can trust. You know, sizing up people, working out who are potential allies or threats. And the faster you made decisions like these, the more likely you were to survive. You know, sitting around considering the next step could get you killed, or you could miss out on the opportunity to reproduce, which would harm your chances of survival down the track. So to survive, we had to be able to separate friend from foe. Our group versus every other group. You know, and I look around in our little bubble we call society, and individual expression, it's been shunted in favor of corporate values. And I use the word values loosely. You know, there's so many obstacles in the way of young men getting a business or concept up and running today. You know, so many walls preventing them from making their dreams a reality and sharing their creativity with the world. Because young men, I mean, they're increasingly excluded from the educational environment due to increased stigma of male sexuality. And hey, if it's not real, no problem. You know, invented microaggressions can now incriminate a male for what he does or doesn't do. You know, the crime of being male is enough. And young men with minimal education, with poor prospects, with empty pockets. I mean, they bury themselves in escapist and often addictive behavior. And they can't deal with or want to deal with reality. And once in that cycle, most times you have to bottom out before you wake up. And by then, it's often too late. They've lost everything. Yeah, it's interesting. I read recently about the experiment by Calhoun, yeah, Mouse Utopia. This is where in an overpopulated environment, male mice, they stopped breeding. They left that environment to create their own utopia, free of female mice. And the females, in turn, they became increasingly violent, and they eventually turned on their own children, assaulting them. Calhoun, he stated this experiment was a prediction of our future. And it looks like he's right. I mean, men are opting out, and it's not just happening in Western society. And if you look at the rates of violence being perpetrated against children by females, I mean, just look at the statistics. Women are the overwhelming majority of those responsible for abuse and murder perpetrated on children. I mean, people are panicking. And this is a natural biological reaction. I mean, if people weren't, I mean, they wouldn't care less about men going their own way. They wouldn't give a damn. They'd simply dismiss it, but they can't. Because it invokes fear. It invokes panic. Because it directly challenges their established worldview. Men are making a logical choice. I mean, the only true safe choice they can make in the current climate. And the best these people can do is try to shame these men. But it's society itself that's become completely inhospitable to men. Yeah, male productivity, it's not even acknowledged, let alone celebrated. It's denigrated. It's leached from. And the family unit now revolves around handouts to mothers. Yeah, exorbitant child support and alimony. Women don't need a male in the home anymore. And in fact, in many instances, it benefits them not to, in terms of receiving handouts from the taxpayer and ex-partners. I mean, it's been said before, and I tend to agree with it, that that women see children as extensions of themselves. And from an evolutionary perspective, it makes sense. You know, it guarantees the female provision from the tribe. But the more we exclude males from the family unit, the less personal investment they are going to have in society. So the only place they can turn is inwards, in turn prioritizing their own needs. I mean, you've heard it all before. You know, the slogan, independent women don't need no man. And these women, they offer men no incentive to be productive. I mean, if women were so empowered, there would be zero fucks given over men opting out. And women wouldn't need all the handouts and privileges they receive. I mean, the writing is on the wall, and the clock is ticking, and women sense this. I mean, both sexes evolved in a climate of mutual cooperation and division of labor. And men and women, in terms of biochemistry, I mean, we've evolved to form bonds of attachment. Now, it's suggested that after orgasm, men and women experience biochemical reactions, and it's said these hormones help to form attachment between the sexes. And that's why the myth of female oppression is such a laughable suggestion. I mean, men and women have evolved to work, cohabitate, and bond with one another. In ancient times, female life was precious. And they held the key to a tribe's survival and their offspring. But now that there's no benefit, but only risk for males when it comes to reproduction, I mean, females' value as a result, it's been reduced substantially. Our perspective of the world, how we view the world, I mean, it's largely a product of the culture that we live in. I mean, if our view of the world is challenged, our sense of security is then threatened. So psychologically, we try to protect ourselves. And the fact is, men are waking up. They're going their own way, which challenges biology, it challenges culture. It causes everyone, both sexes, to question the truth and the fact that they've been lied to. They have to question their identity and their self-worth. I mean, when presented with the truth, if a person is in a state of denial, which is their safety zone, I mean, they'll get defensive, they'll get angry, They'll attempt to mock or censor the person challenging their views. And if you look at the web, with the internet, and especially social media, instead of it broadening our horizons, it's caging us in. I mean, the repeat marketing that we receive, the pop-ups, the recommendations, I mean, it's all being designed for you, the individual. So it's rare that we actually watch something that challenges our perception. So that can end up reinforcing our view of the world and closing our minds to new ideas, to new experiences. So we end up interacting online almost solely with those who share our views. And when someone does have their views challenged online, it tends to be in a very extreme manner, which tends to only reinforce one's worldview. People get stubborn, and no one engages except to attack. And this online community of men, manosphere, or however we term it, I mean, it provides opportunities for new perspectives and new questions, which drives creativity and innovative thought. A healthy curiosity, a need to expand one's knowledge, a passion for debate and discussion, a need to understand and question the status quo, question motives, question drives. So a deeper awareness can develop, so you can develop perspective, so you know what governs behavior. All of this empowers us as men. I mean, the best defense is self-awareness. I recall there used to be a poster hanging on the wall where I worked. It read, "Until you are broken, you don't know what you're made of." Well, I'm sick of seeing broken men. I've seen too many of them. I want to see men empowering themselves through knowledge. And it doesn't matter. I mean, it doesn't matter who speaks. We have the right to question what that person says. And there's always going to be more questions than answers. I mean, that's great. You don't need to feel compelled to justify or explain yourself to anyone. Your questions are what's important. Because this is your process of discovery. No one else's. And if you speak, no one has to agree with you. In truth, it's actually far better that they don't. That they actually challenge your thought process, as opposed to slapping you on the back and giving you their vote of approval. Because change in this world, it will only come about with a shift in consciousness. And it's that shift, born out of rigorous discussion between men, which will impact society the deepest. And most of all, your quality of life.